In this episode of My Michigan Story, Life in the Great Lakes State.
The entire house was just screaming. I heard upstairs people running out. Y2K happened! Holy crap!
Zach Bigelow scores one of the most epic and unrepeatable pranks in history. Ed Smith learns the Mackinac Bridge isn't as tall as he hoped it was.
And I said, well, don't hit the bridge. And so I took out the video camera and I started videoing and I was looking and I said, boy, that looks awful close there.
And Drake Ficarro watches his friend fall down Pyramid Point.
He's literally got like one arm hanging off. And at that point, if he goes any further, like he's done. It is the last stop before the drink.
This is like Wile E. Coyote, like hanging in midair.
Yeah.
Those stories and more up next on My Michigan Story, Life in the Great Lakes State, the New Year's 2026 episode. I'm Rob Prince. It's a new year in Michigan now, 2026, and as exciting as that is, I'm not sure any New Year's Day will ever compare to that New Year's Day in the year 2000. That's when we got to find out if we'd really fixed all the Y2K computer bugs so that all the computers in the world wouldn't suddenly think it was January 1st of the year 1900. I was working in television as a producer-director in Grand Rapids at the time, and I remember they told us that if there was a massive Y2K disaster on January 1st, we were all supposed to come into the station to help tackle the emergency. Personally, I thought if the world did come crashing down on Y2K, the last place I was going to go was to work, but thankfully it didn't come to that. For some people, however, the global tension over the Y2K bug was merely an incredible opportunity for an unforgettable practical joke. And that somebody happened to be Zach Bigelow from Jonesville. He shared this epic Y2K story at our August 2025 open mic live event at Ramshackle Brewing Company. Here's Zach.
We're out in the sticks where the outside light was one of them mercury lights.
Uh-huh.
And that's about the only thing you could see for a good mile around because it was an isolated house.
Uh-huh.
There was a whole house. My buddy was having a party. There was a whole house of us. Two-story old farmhouse.
No one was in there but you guys?
Yeah.
It
was his place.
Oh, okay. We're so you're old enough.
Old enough. Yep. And there was, like I said, there was probably about 20, 30 of us in there just having a good time. He put out a big spread. Well, I was pretty sober at that point because I quit drinking. And I'm like, wait a minute. I know what's coming up. So I went downstairs, down the basement, and I found the breaker box. And I sat and I hid until I'm hearing them count. 5, 4, 3, 2. And then at 1, I hit the main breaker box.
You were willing to sacrifice seeing the turn of the millennium for this trip.
The entire house was just screaming. I heard upstairs people running out. Y2K happened. Holy crap. Just mass panic.
How many people would you say that were there?
20, 30 people.
Oh, my. And everyone went for it.
Everyone panicked because we didn't have, you know, there was no cell phones or nothing.
Right. And you're in the middle of the country, so you can't, like, look and see that it's on elsewhere.
Right.
Oh, my goodness.
Everyone had a Y2K hat right then and there. And, of course, the mercury light was wired into the house. So when they went outside, it was pitch black, dead of winter. Everyone thought Y2K had happened. The Mad Max times are here. And I waited, and they're all like, what do we do? What do we do? And I kicked the breaker back on, and I walk upstairs, and everyone's like, where were you? I'm like, man, I got sick. I had to go puke. And they're like, where were you? The power went out. Y2K. I'm like, no, that didn't happen. I'm like, yes, it did. And I'm like, no, it didn't, because I went downstairs and turned the breaker off. It was the best prank I think I've ever pulled on that amount of people.
I bet a few of them still think, people.
I hope so, because that was a perfect prank.
Oh, my gosh. Perfect prank and some dedication. You needed to know some basics about home electricity And also sacrifice that moment with your friends.
Yeah.
Of seeing them lend. Do you feel any regret for that?
No, not at all. It was worth every minute. Just to hear the chaos upstairs. I wish I could have seen it, but just to hear that chaos was worth it.
Gosh. Oh, that's great.
Zach Bigelow. He shared that story at our August 2025 Open Mic Live event at Ramshackle Brewing Company down in Jonesville. Thanks so much to Zach, Andrew Stella, and all of the awesome people down at Ramshackle Brewing Company who welcomed us so graciously for that open mic event. I miss you guys, and we'll be back down there to see you again real soon. Just the idea of making New Year's resolutions is pretty annoying to a lot of people, largely because of the seeming futility of it all. So few resolutions live to see February. My New Year's resolution for the last 20 years has been to keep my mouth shut, since my mouth seems to get me into more trouble than anything. Clearly that isn't working. But if you think making a New Year's resolution for yourself isn't that productive, imagine making a New Year's resolution for your spouse. That's what my parents tried one time, and you don't have to be a couples therapist to guess that that didn't turn out too well. I interviewed my mom about that little experiment at her home in East Lansing. Here's my mom, Kathy.
Okay, Mom. So tell me about the time that you and Dad came up with New Year's resolutions.
Yeah. Well, we had, you know, it was that time of year, like kind of like it is now, you know, the Christmas time. And we were thinking about what we're going to do for New Year's Eve. And we thought instead of writing our own New Year's Eve resolutions, we would write resolutions for each other. So I would say we probably had been married maybe 25 years. And so
25 years you'd been married, and this still didn't seem like a bad idea.
No. In fact, I thought it seemed like a good idea, and Pa thought it was a good idea. And so, you know, we gave it some thought. And then on New Year's Day, we gave each other our list of resolutions. Now, sadly, I do not remember exactly what our resolutions were. I think
But it was a list.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't just one. How many were there?
Not a lot, maybe three or four. And what I remember of it, I think for mine involving Bill, it might have had to do with like picking up around his chair where he sat.
Okay.
And one thing, when he mowed the lawn, he never mowed in nice, neat, straight lines. And I feel like that could have been there, but why would I care in January? I don't know. But some of the things that I thought were just general things that would help a person, you know, adapt with life. And honestly, I don't quite remember what he wanted from me. Maybe a little less opinions on how. But I wish I had the list. I wish I had the specifics. So we exchanged them. And then we were furious with each other. Furious. I was so mad at him. He was so mad at me. And we never, you know, we weren't like mad at each other. I mean, you know, we'd get irritated with stuff you do, but we were not shouters or screamers. And we weren't in this case either. But the fury, the intensity of the fury was palpable.
How? Since you didn't really yell at each other, how could you tell?
Well, I think there was an intake of breath that And then I feel like for like that, at least certainly the whole month of January, you know, you might say to something, well, if I had picked up, it wouldn't be, you know, they kept coming up, you know, little things, you just innocuous things. Well, I'm not perfect, am I? You know, things like that. I think it took us a good 6 months to completely set it aside. And I think our resolution the following year was, don't make resolutions for other people. That's not a good idea.
Thanks, Mom.
Kathy Prince. She shared that story from her home in East Lansing. The Mackinac Bridge, a.k.a. the Mighty Mac, sure is tall, isn't it? It feels even taller when you're driving over it in a small car during high winds. But as our next storyteller discovered to his horror, the Mighty Mac is mightier in the middle than it is along the sides. And his New Year's resolution might be to measure twice and sail once, to paraphrase an old woodworking adage. Ed Smith shared this story at our November 2025 live event at The Lit in downtown Grand Rapids. Here's Ed.
Well, in 1987, inspired by my trip aboard the J&E Regan, a schooner out of Maine, I decided it was time to move on from my little sailboats that you could sail around in the afternoon or something and get into something that I could navigate with a compass and use the charts to plot my course, and where you could sleep on the boat and so on. One Sunday, our friend told me that there was a sailboat for sale by his neighbor, and I went to look at it, and it took me a year to decide, yes, I would buy that boat, because he hadn't been able to sell it, and he'd reduced the price by half. And so he knew that I didn't have any way of hauling the trailer. This was a 24-foot, you know, good-sized boat, and I didn't have any way to tow it. So this was in East Lansing. And he said, well, where are you going to keep it? And I thought a little bit, and with our family history of Drummond Island, I said, well, Drummond Island, which is several hours trip, of course, from East Lansing. And he agreed to take it to Mackinac City. And I thought I could get the marina to come and get it from there. But he ended up, when we got to Mackinac City, I'll take it all the way, and backed it in. So I had my sailboat finally, and had a number of wonderful trips with the family, and had some friends that liked to sail. And I had one friend who was particularly good at managing the rudder and the tiller and keeping on the course. And this was pretty remarkable because he was blind and had grown up sailing as a kid, and so had, you know, this experience and background. And I would set the course, and then he could feel the wind and the tiller and everything and follow that course. And flash forward, and I had friends that lived on Beaver Island. And so the idea was we would sail to visit my friends. And so we sailed to Mackinac, to the marina there, stayed overnight, and in the morning started out to Beaver Island. Well, from there, you're going to go under the Big Mac, the bridge. And I had never sailed under there before. So as we were approaching the bridge, I thought, I'm going to video record this adventure of going under the bridge. And my friend was at the tiller, and I said, well, don't hit the bridge. And so I took out the video camera and I started videoing, and I was looking, and I said, boy, that looks awful close there.
Don't hit that bridge here. Tiller to port.
I think we're going to clear.
Okay. Okay. We're not too tall?
No.
Tiller to port.
We were on the, you know, one of the side areas, not in the big high area in the middle, but I thought, this is a big bridge. There's no way, you know, that we can't go under it. But the mast hit the bridge, snapped the forestay, you know, the cable that holds the mast up, and it came down. Since we were sailing, the sail kind of cushioned the fall so that it didn't injure us or anything. And The video ended with the expletive. And there we were. And so we had to turn around and motor back to the marina. But they did not have the material to fix the boat. And so the next day we paid somebody to drive us down to another town where there was a marina that we could get the repair. And we're back at Mackinac. And then my friend began to develop some pain, and it got worse. And so he called his brother-in-law, who lived in Sheboygan, who came and took him to the hospital where he had gallstones. And so we were thinking, better to have had that happen here than out in the middle of Lake Michigan or on the island. And so he was able to get repaired of the stones, and eventually we moved on and put our boat back in storage and drove home to East Lansing. While we were still there at the marina, we went downtown to Mackinac City to a t-shirt shop and got t-shirts that had the Mackinac Bridge, and I had them put an X at the spot and embroidered it with "I hit the Big Mac." So I still have that t-shirt to mark the occasion.
Well, we learned something. I'm not sure what.
No major damage to blow.
Ed Smith, he shared that story at our November 2025 live event at The Lit in downtown Grand Rapids. Special thanks to Penny Hawk for hosting us at The Lit. If you'd like to catch one of our open mic live events there, My Michigan Story is at The Lit the third Friday of every month at 7 p.m. You can get more information on our website, mymichiganstory.com. That's mimichiganstory.com. That's also where you can see the video of Ed hitting the Mackinac Bridge with his sailboat and the custom t-shirt he made to commemorate that event. All of that and more is over at our website, mymichiganstory.com. Michiganders are often drawn to the edges of things, oddly enough, considering the edges of stuff can be super dangerous. Drake Ficarro's New Year's resolution might be to not go near the edges of things anymore, especially Pyramid Point up in the northwest shore of the Lower Peninsula. He shared this story at our June 2025 open mic storytelling event at Apothecary Espresso and Coffee in Farmington. Here's Drake.
We almost killed my friend. We went to Pyramid Point, which is the highest point in Michigan.
Where is that? Elevation-wise,
it's a little north of Sleeping Bear Dunes, actually.
Okay, all right.
So you hike up to the point, and you can oversee a beautiful, beautiful view of Lake Michigan. This is after we graduated from high school. So we said, let's just do one big trip before everyone goes their separate ways for school.
What year is this?
This is 2014.
Okay.
It's 2014. So statute of limitations.
I think, on murder?
On murder. I think I'm in the clear.
I think
clear.
You're in the clear. It's 10 years.
Yeah. So we drive up there, you know, we hike to the point, and there's this huge sign that's like, just so you know, it's over $1,000 to have the Coast Guard come save you if you go down the point and cannot get back up. Because it's a very steep fall off, and they're like, do not do this. It's literally just saying in plain English with, you know, a nice big money sign, like, this will be a costly mistake. Mm. And of course, we say, well, we're not going to do that, obviously, but that doesn't stop him from tripping and falling. I see a... you know, guy my age, 18, just rolling down Pyramid Point, but the wrong way towards the lake. Luckily, he gets caught by a tiny cliff, and there's just some rocks and sticks, and of course, a lot of sand, and he gets caught, and he's literally got like one arm hanging off. And at that point, if he goes any further, like he's done. It is the last stop before the drink.
This is like... Wile E. Coyote, like, hanging in midair.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And we're just like, oh, wow. What? that sucks.
And it's hard to find the words. Like,
he's just obviously the wind knocked out of him, mm-hmm. laying there hurt, possibly not all there mentally at the same time already to begin with. We then have to start the trek of how do we get him out?
So under $1,000.
Yeah. We're like, we're not paying $1,000. I mean, we'll leave him before we pay the $1,000. But I am wearing flip-flops and socks for some reason, which did not lead to good, you know.
Yeah, that's the Coast Guard's climbing uniform.
But eventually we're able to, like, kind of climb down-ish and kind of get him up.
Wow, pull
him
out. He couldn't get himself back up.
No, we had to, like, you know, throw him over the shoulder, like, you know, the three-legged race up the hill.
He was not able to move on his own power.
No.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he felt like he rolled that. Yeah. We, you know, we got him out. He said, thanks, guys, for almost killing me. And then we just walked back to the car, and everything was business as usual. No hospital, of course. We're 18 and 17. We're like, well, that's going to cost money. So we're not going to do that. And plus, they'll definitely tell our parents. He's 17. So,
oh my goodness.
Yeah, he would have absolutely ruined our vacation over that. So, but it's all right. He's alive now. He's doing well, I think. Doesn't live here. Boo, but.
Uh-huh. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, wow. So it's, don't get close to the edge. That's what I learned.
And that's a good life lesson.
Just go to Sleeping Bear Dunes. You don't have to go to Pyramid Point. One is not, they're effectively the same thing, and one is substantially more dangerous.
Drake Vaccaro, he shared that story at our June 2025 open mic storytelling event at Apothecary Espresso and Coffee in Farmington. And special thanks to Drake for helping to organize that event. This is My Michigan Story, Life in the Great Lakes State, the New Year's 2026 episode. I'm Rob Prince. Would you like to see My Michigan Story, Life in the Great Lakes State, live and in person? Well, you're in luck, because we will be at the Lit in downtown Grand Rapids on Friday, January 16th at 7 p.m. In fact, we're at the Lit the third Friday of every month at 7 p.m., and all of those events are free. Then we'll be in Hastings on Wednesday, January 26th at 6 p.m. in the Hastings Public Library. We're also going to be in Hastings every month, though the dates do vary. For more information on all of our live events and other news, visit mymichiganstory.com. That's mimichiganstory.com. That's also where you can contact us to submit your true story from Michigan. We would love to hear from you, because we can't make this show without your stories. Thanks. I imagine a lot of Michiganders are resolving to do more to help people experiencing homelessness in 2026. Our next storyteller's New Year's resolution, however, might be to not help them more. Darren Lewis shared this story of good intentions gone wrong at our July 2025 live event at River's Edge Gallery in Wyandotte as well. Here's Darren.
My life has always been about helping people. And at one time, I ran a soup kitchen in downtown Detroit and then almost got a felony giving people peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Tell me about it.
You ready to hear this
one? Yeah, yeah.
All right. So literally one of my buddies came to me when I was in college, and he was like, hey, man, I want to help the homeless people in Detroit. And I was like, I'm all in on any crazy idea that you have. Let's go. So my buddy's like, all right, I don't really know how to do this. So I just start researching it, and I find that you can literally contact any church in America, and they'll give you free stuff. Literally, if you just tell them I'm here helping the homeless, they've got like 600 things of mouthwash they'll just give you. Like, completely free. So I just figure out, I'm like, all right, we're going to put a bunch of peanut butter together, and we're just going to go hand them out in the middle of the night.
Just to clarify, though, yeah. It was just peanut butter you're
getting
out?
No. I put together, like, 1,000 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, like, probably another 1,000 bologna sandwiches, because it was just cheap. So we put them all together, we stuffed them in backpacks, and we headed down to Detroit. I used to run the Detroit Mission Trip, which is basically, like, a thing for kids at high school level to come experience what Detroit used to be. But here's the thing, like, we would take these kids down there and they had no, like, street smarts. Our first stop was downtown Detroit. So we're walking around handing out sandwiches. Well, we get to the train station before Ford Motor Company bought it. So it's still abandoned looking. So as we're walking down the street, I've got like 15 kids with me. They're around 16 to 18. And all of a sudden, one of them goes, hey, there's a car rolling up on us real fast. And from beside me, I hear my buddy unclip his holster. And I'm like, fudge, this is about to get real bad. And then they turn the lights on. And I'm like, oh, cool. They're just helpers. They're here to help us. The next thing I know is I find myself in handcuffs. I've got all of these kids in zip ties because the cop didn't have enough handcuffs. So handcuffs is a comfortable position for me. I'm okay with being in handcuffs, clearly. So I ask the cop, I go, hey, listen, what's all this about? He goes, son, you're on federal property right now. This is an international railroad crossing. Did you not see the goddamn signs? And I go, no, sir, I didn't see the goddamn signs. So he grabs the handcuffs and walks me to the front of this dirt road. And he goes, you see that sign on the pole? And I go, sir, the one that's bent in half and is covered in graffiti? No, I did not see that sign, sir. And then he walks me to another sign that's also covered in graffiti. And he goes, did you see that sign? And I go, absolutely not, sir. This is going to be a real bad night for you. So I spend the next 6 hours in handcuffs on this dirt road. The cop finally lets me go. He's like, listen, you're going to have to go to court for this. I'm dropping it down to a misdemeanor. I was like, all right, cool, whatever. In the meantime, waiting for my trial, I don't know. Do you guys know who Mitch Albom is? I was working for him at another rescue mission, and he got wind of what happened to me. He brought me on his radio show, and then Channel 7 tried to pick us up because they wanted to run a story about how Milani, the guy that used to own the building, was like unfairly treating children. And I was like, well, I'm not a child. I'm an actual adult. So he's treating me pretty fairly. I'm going to be honest with you guys. So, but it ended up, we go on the radio show, we explain what we were doing, and literally they go, so they were going to get you guys for felony trespassing for just giving out peanut butter and jellies. And I said, well, yeah, that and anaphylactic shock. We didn't quite know who might have a peanut allergy, you know. So it would have been really bad. So, but no, what ended up happening is we went to trial. We were literally sitting there. I had myself, my friend that almost pulled a gun on the cops, and then all these kids with us. And the judge looks at us and he goes, are you all together? And I was like, yeah, dude, you can just run this together, man. Like, if we're all going down, I'm taking these kids with me, bro. These are going to be my dependents and right now. So the judge looks at me and goes, son, I don't know what you were doing down there, but do you know how many dead bodies do we find in that building every year? And I stopped for a second because I can't stop myself from being a smartass, but I didn't think under oath was a good time to be. But I couldn't help it, everybody. I'm from Downriver. And I literally said, well, sir, I think it's zero, but you're going to tell me a ton, right? At that point, I had the right to remain silent, but could not. Luckily, the cop that was holding me at that point was like, look, just chill. He's going to let you guys off. I got a long spiel about how I should not be bringing children to abandoned factories. Since then, though, I've become a complete degenerate, if you can't tell. Like, I don't help homeless people anymore. I learned my lesson.
Yeah. No good deed goes unpunished.
No good deed goes unpunished.
Darren Lewis. He shared that story at our July 2025 live event at River's Edge Gallery in Wyandotte. And for the record, I do think Michiganders should do more to help people experiencing homelessness in 2026, but, you know, in a safe way that doesn't involve felony trespassing. Thanks so much for listening to this edition of My Michigan Story, Life in the Great Lakes State, the New Year's 2026 episode. Today's episode was edited by myself, Rob Prince. My Michigan Story is presented by WKAR in East Lansing, Michigan. Remember, I can't make My Michigan Story without your Michigan Story. So submit your story today at mymichiganstory.com.